You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
Hey, Majority Report listeners, this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, February 4th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the award-winning Majority Report.
Very unsure of yourself today, sir.
We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building, the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, New York Magazine media reporter Gabriel Sherman, author of The Loudest Voice in the Room, an unauthorized biography of Roger Ailes. Also on the program today, Farm Bill set to pass, $8 billion cut from food stamps, $90 a month for almost 1.5 million people who are living large, some of whom are getting food stamps just because they can't pay their heating bills, which of course is an indication that they should obviously not eat. Also on the program today, Republicans threatening another debt limit standoff. I think they're actually going to put one thing on the table. I will tell you what it is as the program progresses. Also on the program today, just one more tidbit about Chris Christie's. One of his fired, subpoenaed, doubly subpoenaed, I guess, former deputy chief of staff, not only will plead the fifth, but will also not hand over documents. And trouble for the GOP. It seems Victoria Jackson is disillusioned, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get to this right away, because it's that type of news day. You all know Victoria Jackson. She's the former Saturday Night Live performer who went on to write such great hits as There's a Communist Living in the White House.
And I missed that one. Is that actually real?
It is real, yes.
Oh, my God.
She's been very famous for her ukulele songs, talking about how we are all subject to a Kenyan socialist takeover and attacks on Christianity. I have no idea. She's on to me. Well, it seems that Victoria Jackson has thrown her hat, one of those crazy, wacky hats she likes to wear, into the political arena by petitioning to run for a county commissioner position in Williamson County, Tennessee. However, there's a twist. She is going to run as an independent for one of two District 2 commission seats, is according to the Tennessean newspaper. She told the Tennessean that She's just now out of sync with the GOP. But I can't, I just can't do it anymore. They just don't have the values of our founding fathers anymore. I can't do her voice.
It was pretty good, actually.
Was it all right? I am sure there are a few Republicans who do. I want less federal government involvement, lower taxes, smaller government, more public involvement. I don't know what that means. And a balanced budget and fiscal responsibility. So one less Republican operative. Sadly, Victoria Jackson, now an independent. Of course, my guess is that she's going to vote for every Republican who runs for office. So
that's really problematic because she's running. It's like she could actually win. And those jobs actually have, in a very narrow sense, like they actually have responsibility.
That's what's
going on.
It's
not like her running for Congress or something.
I don't know that she's incompetent just because she's sort of a lunatic. But
she's a very competent.
It's also indicative of what's happening around the country. She's just the most well-known of these people running for these spots. But the lunatic fringe has taken over local government in a lot of these states. But
in this role, can I help investigate Benghazi?
Yeah, exactly. She'll be holding Benghazi hearings very shortly. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Gabriel Sherman, the reporter, the media reporter for New York Magazine, and the author of Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For our listeners, Majority Report listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook. It'll give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook you could download is Gabe Sherman's The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. You're about to hear from the author right now. Then go and pick up the free audiobook at audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for your free audio version of The Loudest Voice in the Room. Do it now. You hit me like a ton. No, no, no. Ooh, yeah. Well, I turn my feelings on. I turn my feelings on the side. Yeah, yeah. Like I'm gonna ignite. I saw them stars go off. I saw them stars go off at night. Ooh, yeah. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone, the contributing editor to New York Magazine and author of Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. Gabe Sherman. Gabe, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So give us a sense of what you set out to do when you started this project. This is you were working on this for 3 years. You interviewed over 600 people. What were you setting out to do in the beginning?
Well, I've been covering media for a decade, and Fox News is the most dominant media outlet in America. It is the most profitable division of Rupert Murdoch's media empire. It has twice the audience of CNN and MSNBC. And so I set out to write what I wanted to be the definitive history of Fox News. And very early into that research, more than 3 years ago, I realized that the way to tell that story, the best way to tell that story, was through the life and career of Roger Ailes, the founder and creator of Fox News, because Fox News is the culmination of everything he had been working towards in his more than four decades in public life. He, as a political strategist to Republicans, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and as a TV producer, he had combined those two skills into a new form of communication in American politics, using the news agenda to advance a Republican agenda. And so that was the way to tell the story, was through his career.
And so when they set out to make Fox News, I mean, what was the idea here? That, I mean, both from Ailes' perspective and from Murdoch's perspective, I mean, was it simply, what was the driving force behind it? I mean, you know, and I ask this as someone who, you know, started my radio career on Air America. And, you know, a big part of that was some notion of we need to have, and we as in a sort of, I guess, liberals or people on the left, need to have some type of commercial vehicle to push back against the right wing narrative. In many respects, what we perceived was Fox and was right wing talk radio. What was the impetus of behind Fox?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question. You know, from Murdoch's perspective, it was a business move. Murdoch is a conservative, but he's primarily, first and foremost, a businessman. And so he hired Roger Ailes in 1996 to create a network, a cable news network that could compete with CNN. Murdoch's original vision for Fox News was more tabloid. Think of it like the New York Post with picture, you know, moving pictures, rather than kind of a right-wing propaganda machine that Ailes has created. So Murdoch's agenda was to make profits. Ailes' agenda was more complicated. You know, he had made his career in Republican politics. You know, it's interesting to point out that he was trained by Richard Nixon in 1968. And so he developed this view that journalists were the enemy. So for Ailes, Fox News was always this vehicle to inject his point of view into the American political bloodstream. So for Ailes, Fox News was a political project. I would say for Murdoch, it was more of a commercial venture.
Interesting. And to what extent did Ailes look at what was happening with guys like, particularly like Rush Limbaugh, and say there's obviously a market here for this? And to what extent was a guy like Limbaugh sort of a template in any way?
That's another great point. You know, Ailes, it's important to note that Ailes and Limbaugh were very close. Ailes actually created Limbaugh's short-lived syndicated television show. Not many people remember this, but in the early 1990s, Rush Limbaugh had a late-night television talk show, and Ailes was the creator of that. So Ailes understood that the talk radio audience was potentially a vast, untapped television audience. And so through his work and his friendship with Limbaugh, he understood that, and it took him about 3 or 4 years after that to apply that to cable news.
And that's where he found, at the very least, that's where he found Hannity.
Yes, and you know, Ailes wanted Limbaugh to come to Fox, and actually through the years he's tried and failed to recruit him. I mean, Limbaugh failed at television and decided that, you know, radio was his thing, and he's spectacularly wealthy, so he doesn't need to do television. So Ailes went out and found Hannity, who was kind of a second-tier talk radio host from Atlanta, had never been on national, never hosted a national TV show. And really, Ailes found a bunch of second-tier people to populate Fox, and he remade them in his image. And I think that's a testament to Ailes' genius, is he's able to kind of take these also-rans and B-list characters and turn them into right-wing media stars. And that's one of the secrets to Fox's success.
I mean, when you say that's one of the secrets, is what? That he basically finds people who are...
What I'm trying to say is the entire organization functions at Ailes' pleasure. And so he picks people who will be 100% loyal to him. So by plucking these obscure characters and making them multimillionaires and into right-wing celebrities, they owe everything to Roger Ailes. And it's important to point out that Ailes expects his talent to be devoted to him, almost as like a spiritual figure. And the only one who breaks the mold at Fox, well, actually, there's a couple of people who break the mold at Fox, but Bill O'Reilly is really the one talent who created his show on his own. He kind of made himself into a star and doesn't feel like he owes his success to Ailes. But Hannity is an example of someone who is kind of a nobody outside of right-wing talk radio, and now he is one of the most influential people in the conservative movement.
Yeah, Hannity is definitely a guy who I think sort of has had success beyond his talent. I mean, personally, I think Bill O'Reilly's a little bit wacky and a bit of a nut job, but he's clearly talented in a way that I think Hannity is not. But tell us how did that happen with O'Reilly? How did O'Reilly ended up at Fox?
So O'Reilly had flamed out of more TV jobs than people could remember. He had tried to make it in broadcast news, and his ego and his volatility made him bounce around the TV news industry. And so he bailed out of television and had gone back to school and got a master's degree in government at Harvard, of all places, which is ironic because O'Reilly loves to bash the East Coast elites, and yet he has a Harvard degree. But he pitched himself when he heard that Ailes was starting a new cable news network. He pitched himself to Ailes as wanting to host an opinionated news show, essentially a platform for his own editorial worldview. And Ailes went for it, and O'Reilly kind of created the show in his own image. So really, it's the one show on Fox that Ailes didn't single-handedly create himself.
Interesting. And the other guy who it's an interesting story to me is Beck, because he brought Beck over, and then just quickly Beck just went outside of the parameters. I mean, where Ailes was laying down. Talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was gonna when I said there was a couple of people who've broken the mold at Fox. I was actually about to include Glenn Beck in that group. It's interesting to point out Glenn Beck. It was not about the politics. Glenn Beck's problems at Fox News had nothing to do with ideology. And in fact, my book reveals really for the first time that Ailes and Beck are simpatico when it comes to their right-wing worldview. In many ways, Ailes may be even further to the right than Beck on certain issues. Their problems, the reason Beck ran into headwinds at Fox was because he was not willing to follow orders and did not devote himself to pleasing Roger Ailes. He did not make Ailes his patron. And in fact, Beck is building his own media empire outside of Fox. He has a popular conservative website. He does these speaking tours all over the country. He can lead a rally of thousands of people to the mall in Washington, D.C. And so Ailes looked at a guy like Beck and said, wait a minute, this guy's not working for me. He's competing with me. And right. So the tensions began because they were Beck wasn't willing to lay himself down for Fox News.
Right. I mean, Beck was just using his show in some ways as a platform to promote his.
Well, that's the way Ailes saw it. And it's important to point out, though, that politically, Ailes and Beck are on the same page. My book reveals how after Beck famously said on the show Fox and Friends that President Obama has a, quote, deep-seated hatred for white people, the next day Ailes told his senior-most executives, listen, the guy's right. I agree with him. So, Ailes shares Beck's worldview. It's not that Beck was too crazy for Fox. There was that storyline that Fox PR put out there after Beck left that, oh, Fox is doing a course correction and, it's moderating and Beck was too far out there. I mean, that's not true at all. Beck really was Fox News.
I want to get back to that the course correction thing in a bit, because and talk also about the sort of the implications of Hannity's move a little bit too in a bit. But one thing that I think is really clear from your book is that that Beck and Ailes not only share sort of an ideology, but sort of a similar, I don't know what the best way to say it, deep-seated paranoia, and sort of a worldview that transcends like politics, but one, I mean, just I think paranoid delusions in some way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say Ailes is actually far more paranoid than Glenn Beck. I mean, you know, Beck in terms of talking about progressives in the far left, I mean, he sketches out a paranoid and conspiratorial view of American politics. But on a personal level, what my book shows is that Ailes is now a man who is about to turn 74 years old and is consumed with fears about his personal physical safety. Now, he has a bunker, a compound underneath his mansion in upstate New York that can weather a terrorist attack. He travels by SUV with an armed with a bodyguard. Ailes carries a concealed handgun. He has a German Shepherd who is trained to patrol his property and look out for intruders. I mean, this is a man who is consumed with fears about his place in the world. And I think you see that on the screen at Fox. I mean, Fox speaks to a part of America that is scared and fearful of where this country is going. And I think it all flows out of Ailes' own paranoia.
And just to be fair, full disclosure, four of those five things you mentioned about what Ailes does, I have the same thing. So just to be fair. But I want to talk about that area. I mean, this was a story, I mean, that we heard about a couple of years ago about his takeover of this Putnam County. Putnam County is where he lives. It's about an hour or so
north of Manhattan.
Yeah, of Manhattan. I think it's a Garrison area, and he bought up a newspaper there, and in some ways, like, what happened up there with the paper, it was almost as if he was not getting enough of a rush from what he was doing with Fox, and he wanted to sort of like create a microcosm of a similar dynamic in this sort of fairly small town. Talk to us about what he did up there and the stories that came out of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ailes built a mansion in Garrison, New York, on a hilltop overlooking the Hudson River. He has a panoramic view of the West Point Military Academy. Ailes has had a lifelong romance with the military. He almost fetishizes the American military. So he built this compound that gave him this view of West Point. And then in 2008, after living up in Garrison for several years, bought the local newspaper because, as he told one person who's quoted in my book, he thought the community needed more of a speaking to. And Ailes did not like how the town was trying to preserve open space. It's a very beautiful part of New York State, a lot of open space. It's not developed with suburban homes. And the town was trying to push through a zoning overhaul that would put restrictions on land use and protect the character of the town. And Ailes hated that. You know, the idea that the government would try to limit certain kinds of growth was totally out of whack to him. So he buys his local paper and installs a young editor who had worked at the conservative magazine, The Weekly Standard, who became almost like an acolyte to Ailes. And with this paper, just pushed through his worldview, demonized anyone who was in support of this zoning overhaul, and really divided the town right down the middle. You had, you know, the small business owners and the conservatives who were in Ailes' camp, and then you had, you know, average everyday folks and you know, liberals and progressives in the other camp. And all of a sudden, this town, which had existed peacefully, and, you know, there had been differences, but they all worked them out, was just kind of split into these warring camps. And as a writer and a reporter, I found this episode so illuminating, because you see in a small town scale what Fox News had done to America, and it was almost like this this case study. You could see it in the human relationships of these small town characters who have known each other. They're at the grocery store, and all of a sudden they're, you know, fighting over the articles that were in Ailes' paper. So it was a great way to illuminate what Fox has done to the country.
And he had a very strange relationship with that guy that he hired to run the paper, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a really fascinating relationship, which I explore in the book. And what I find so illuminating about it is that it's not about ideology. The editor he hired was a young rising star in the conservative movement, had went to Notre Dame, had started a conservative newspaper at the University of Notre Dame. So he was a true believer. So his issues with Ailes had nothing to do with ideology. The issue was that it essentially became a cult of personality. And Ailes and his wife were essentially trying to control this young kid's life. And he couldn't travel without them. They were demanding that he be around them at all times. It almost became, the closest thing I can describe it is a cult of personality. And you really see, I found this reporting illuminating of who Ailes is as a man. I mean, we finally see the man for who he is, and he has done the very same thing at Fox. I mean, Fox News is a cult of personality. The people who are in Ailes' inner circle both are terrified of him and they are in awe of him. And he demands that kind of loyalty. You cannot be close to that man unless you profess your ultimate loyalty to him. And if he senses that you are not fully loyal to him, he turns on you and will cut you loose and destroy you. And so this is the kind of man that Roger Ailes is, and this is what Fox News is. And I think it's really important to think of Fox News not really as a company or as a news organization, but really as a cult of personality that happens to employ some journalists. I mean, I have referred to it in the past as a political organization, and it really is, but it's not a political organization that exists to help the Republican Party. It has surpassed the Republican Party. It's a political organization that exists to help Roger Ailes.
One of the things that you talk about in the book is sort of the use of the Fox private security service, to sort of intimidate people that Ailes has an issue with. To what extent, I mean, in your reporting, did you come across any indication that what was happening in England in terms of the phone hacking? I mean, one of the things that always occurred to me with the phone hacking thing is that if you've got News Corp security doing this stuff in England, how unlikely is it that those same techniques are not being used in this country? I mean, if Ailes, you know, is aware that this stuff is being used in Great Britain, you write about how this guy is so paranoid. It's right up his alley to get access to whatever the technology or the methodology that's being used. Do you have a sense of whether or not that stuff crossed the pond?
I have no firsthand reporting that would indicate that there was phone hacking that took place here in the States. And what I think is actually interesting is to point out is that Fox News doesn't need to do phone hacking. Actually, if you look at what Fox News puts on the screen, it's not like they are breaking stories left and right. I mean, Roger Ailes doesn't need to hack into his adversary's phones to go after them.
Well, he doesn't need to do it. He doesn't need to do it for a story. I mean, but,
So what I'm trying to say is in my book, I show how Ailes was delighting in the phone hacking scandal because all of a sudden there were other people at News Corp who were engulfed in scandals and they weren't aimed at him. Long story short, I don't have any evidence that Fox News was engaged in any of that. It's obviously an interesting and a natural question, but it's a different culture. The tabloid culture in London, the Fleet Street culture, is, I know it's the same company, but it's a different culture than it exists here in America.
Interesting. All right, so let's turn to sort of Ailes' role in terms of I mean, in some ways, leading the Republican Party. I mean, I think that, you know, between Ailes and Limbaugh, they are... they dictate to the Republican Party. I mean, this notion of of the, you know, Fox being a political operation. I mean, this, let's talk about that for a moment, because, you know, about, I guess, I don't know if it was 4 or 5 years ago, I think maybe it was around 2008, there was a big push by liberals, you know, a lot of it emanating out of Media Matters, to label Fox as a political operation. In fact, I think there was a big push in the run-up to the DNC in 2008 to deny them press credentials. They could get credentials as a media outlet or as an opinion journalist outlet, but not as a news outlet. I mean, and this is clearly what you have come to find. I mean, why do you think it took so long for this to sort of permeate, I guess, the nonpartisan perspective on Fox?
Well, I think several things. I think it's a testament to Ailes's brilliance as a marketer and as a PR guru. I mean, the fair and balanced slogan, the fiction that Fox is fair and balanced, is one of the great American sales jobs in modern history. I mean, Ailes is part of a long tradition in American culture of hucksters and salesmen who have pulled a fast one and pulled one over on the American people. So in that way, I think he's a great American story, because we're a country that loves to fall for hucksters and people like who want to sell you something. But I think that's a great question. I mean, there's no doubt that Fox News is not a news organization. It's a political organization. They employ some journalists, and they have reporters who work for them, but their aim is to advance the agenda of Roger Ailes. And so, you know, that's a question for, you know, the world to decide, you know, politicians, the White House Correspondents Association, to decide, you know, where Fox fits in. But I think my book lays out the facts of what that organization is, and then, you know, I'd be curious how the culture responds to that, and whether they are continued to be accepted as a legitimate news source. I mean, what's so interesting is that, you know, as we speak right now, Fox has a prime seat in the White House briefing room. Ed Henry, the White House correspondent for Fox News, asks Jay Carney questions. He's treated no differently than reporters from the New York Times, the Associated Press, even, you know, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Times, even, which is a conservative paper. So Fox News has sort of winnowed its way into the American journalistic establishment, by even though they play by completely different rules.
Well, I mean, what do you think accounts for that? I mean, you know, as you go around on you know, talking about the book, and obviously you've probably have had a lot of conversation. I mean, what, you know, and I think, you know, at one point there was you even had other media organizations sort of jumping to their defense over the past couple of years when there were issues.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. I make my living as a reporter. I believe in the First Amendment. It's, you know, a bedrock principle of American democracy. And I get queasy at the notion of the Democrat Party and the White House deciding or calling out Fox, singling them out as that's not a decision for the White House to make. That's a decision for, I mean, this is an answer to your question of why do journalists defend Fox. I think it's because it touches on this nerve that runs very deep, and I share it, that I get very queasy when elected officials and partisans start deciding who is a real journalist or not. And that's not a decision for the White House to make. That's a decision for the American journalist establishment and other reporters and newsrooms and how our industry, you know, sort of what are the standards that we expect people to follow. But I think, to answer your question, the reason why that backfired when the Obama White House called out Fox, the reason why other journalists defended them, is because it raises a larger point, which is that down the line, if we had a Republican administration in office and all of a sudden they don't like me, or they don't like the New York Times, or they don't like another reporter, you don't want to get into a precedent where the government starts deciding who can play and who can't.
Right. No, and I agree with that. And I think, but my question is less about, and I should say, you know, I think you've immersed yourself in that Fox world so much. You said Democrat Party as opposed to Democratic Party, but the real question to me is, I understand the impetus for journalists to rise in defense in that situation, but why is there a reluctance for journalistic organizations to not see, which, I mean, you've clearly documented it in a painstaking fashion. But with that said, I think, you know, one needed to really, really turn the other way to get a notion that that stuff wasn't going on there. I mean, why do you think that there has, and even now, you know, there's, you've got, you know, a lot of documented evidence about what Fox is. Why do you think that there is no journalistic outfits that are saying, you know what, we're going to perceive Fox as an opinion outlet rather than sort of a real typical, you know, as a news network?
Oh, I mean, those are interesting questions. You know, my role as a reporter, the way I see it, is I want to be exhaustive and rigorous in my reporting and tell the story that is informed by my reporting. You know, how the world responds to the facts that I've uncovered in the book. I mean, those are logical questions, but the short answer is I don't have an answer. And I think it will be interesting over the next months and years as my book is digested by the culture, whether it changes people's perceptions.
Gabe, you've been reporting on the media for a long time. I mean, give me your sense of, like, at least, you know, from arm's length. I mean, I get that you don't want to in any way sort of prejudice with sort of your own opinion in this specific thing. But what dynamics exist in the media world that would prevent these organizations from having that recognition?
Let's just take a specific example. You know, the White House Correspondents Association, it's the kind of the establishment of the D.C. press corps. You know, they have a board. There are standards about who's a member, and, you know, it's, I guess basically you would, one of the issues is you would need someone to take it up as a cause. I mean, right. There is inertia. There is, kind of a legacy built up of Fox being now a part of the D.C. political establishment. So, you know, for that to change, it would require a constituency to really take that on. And I don't see there being a natural constituency, because I don't think it necessarily bothers some of the other reporters in Washington that Fox does what they do. They do what they do. And people know what they do now, and I don't see there being a natural constituency outside of the progressive community to really take that on. I could be wrong, but I guess I just don't see.
I think that's my sense. I think that's my sense too. And I wonder if that there is this sort of quality now where it's affected Fox's efficacy in some way. Because one of the things about Fox that I think was true maybe 5 years ago, more so than it's true today, was that not only were they speaking, and obviously they're the biggest, the most successful cable news outlet in terms of numbers of people, but not only are they speaking to those people, there was a time where they could actually drive the in conjunction, I think, with right-wing talk radio and Drudge, they could drive the media narrative in a way that would permeate the other outlets that they can't do anymore, it seems to me. Is that your sense?
Well, I think, you know, my book traces the rise of Fox, and now we're in the decline phase. We're in the downfall phase. That dynamic, you know, the early part of the last decade, from about 2001, from 9/11 until 2006, was really the golden period of Fox American politics. The George W. Bush presidency is really the Fox News presidency. Fox cheerleaded the Iraq War. You saw the entire American journalism establishment shift to the right. The hyper-patriotism, the nationalism, the quieting of dissent, any kind of dissent was considered unpatriotic. That was a testament to Fox's explosive growth. And I show in the book how MSNBC at the time, which was totally fledgling and failing, tried to actually become more right-wing than Fox News. The executives at NBC said, wait a minute, Fox is working. We should be more like them.
I remember so Tucker Carlson, Scarborough Country, Pat Buchanan.
All those guys. And so what basically you saw was that Fox in those years transcended the conservative media and became the dominant voice in the American media. Now we're in the phase where Ailes' audience is continuing to get older and older. The median age of a Fox viewer is in the late 60s. It's almost 10 years older than MSNBC or CNN. And so their ability to drive the conversation is diminishing because their audience is shrinking. It's still the dominant audience in cable news, but it's not a growing audience. It's an old, white, middle-class, very conservative audience. And so, now we're in the age where Ailes is facing the limits of his power. But my book shows that period after 9/11, when Fox really did reshape America.
I remember it. So what happens? I mean, what happens if Ailes, I don't know, decides he's going to retire tomorrow? Or
well, I can assure you that he, after all this reporting. Is not the kind of guy that willingly.
That was my polite way of saying gets hit by a bus. I mean, what happens if there's no Roger Ailes? When at one point there's not going to be a Roger Ailes who is going to be.
I wouldn't wish that on.
I wouldn't either. That's why I said retire.
If there is no Roger Ailes in the picture, Fox News cannot exist in its current form. I mean, the entire network is about him. There's not a logical successor, at least that he is publicly anointed. His executives beneath him are all fiercely competitive with each other and are fighting for his affection. And so if you take him out, if you take the king out, all of the princes then turn on each other, and it's a battle for control. I mean, one executive in the building told me that Fox News would be like a Lord of the Flies situation without Ailes. So I don't know. I mean, it's still a phenomenally profitable business. They have loyal viewers. Their cable distribution contracts are very stable. It's not going to go away overnight, but it can't continue in its present form. It would have to become something different.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because you mentioned the course correction that they supposedly took, and there seems to have been at least some minor massaging at the edges, an awareness that they may want to bring in a woman at 9 o'clock. So they brought in Megyn Kelly, and they pushed Hannity, who I know has been plagued throughout his career with this sort of just horrible awareness that women just do not like him. I know this just from conversations that he had with a former co-host of mine in the radio business. Is he trying not to get too far out ahead of the Republican Party? I mean, has he realized that in some respects they've created a Frankenstein that is now hindering the Republican Party, at least on a national level?
I think the changes are cosmetic. They're not reflective of any strategic shift. I mean, Ailes has disdain for the Republican Party. I mean, in my book, I quote him telling his senior team that the GOP couldn't organize a one-car funeral. I mean, the guy thinks that the GOP are a bunch of boobs. And so I don't think he is making these changes because he feels like Fox is hurting the Republican Party. I think Ailes is a producer, first and foremost, and he's trying to keep his audience engaged. And, Fox had not changed the primetime lineup.
Oh.
Change they made really was dumping Combs and giving that show to Hannity. But, it was the most stable lineup in cable news. So moving Megyn Kelly to 9 o'clock, I think you know, from my sense was that it was about, you know, injecting some new blood into the bloodstream. But, you know, Fox is Roger Ailes, and this is not reflective of any kind of moderating influence on Ailes at all. I mean, this is just, I think, a producer's dilemma of how do you keep your audience interested after they've maybe grown a little tired.
Does he, I mean, lastly, and I know you got to go here, but does he think that his, I mean, how does he perceive the audience? I mean, he's I think, probably one of the greatest propagandists this country has seen, and I don't say that with at least I don't use the term propagandist with a, you know, specifically a value judgment here.
I think Ailes is incredibly cynical about television viewers. You know, it's funny, in interviews he's, you know, praised his audience, and he said things like, you know, the American people are very smart, and you know, you can't pull a fast one on him. And yet, I went to the Nixon archives and was reading these private memos that Ailes was writing as a young producer on the Richard Nixon presidential campaign in 1968. And he would write things like, television is a hit-and-run medium, or the viewer simply can't process too much information and you need to boil it down. I mean, when you see him unscripted in private, confidential letters, you see him having disdain and cynicism towards the viewers. And so I think basically Ailes knows what people want, and on a very kind of gut emotional level. And he is a great propagandist. He knows how to feed them the red meat that keeps them hooked all day long. I mean, Fox viewers are famous for leaving the channel on all day long. So I think Ailes, even though he would never say it himself, based on his own writing and the way he's described television viewers in private, I think he actually is very cynical towards his audience.
Gabriel Sherman, contributing editor to New York Magazine and author of The Loudest Voice in the Room, How the Brilliant, Bombastic Roger Ailes Built Fox News and Divided a Country. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks. That draws to a close our first half of our program, and as we prepare to enter into the fun zone, the no fun zone of the funner half of the Majority Report, I remind you that you can support this program by becoming a member of the Majority Report today. You can do so at majority.fm, 33 cents a day, folks. This is, our program for a daily program is one of the few, I believe, in any medium that does not boil it down and pre-digest it so that we can shove it down your gullets. No, we take the time to do some nuance. So there's also some time we're not so nuanced, but we mix it up. And you can support this program by becoming a member today, 33 cents a day, ladies and gentlemen. Chicken feed. Not even, actually. Non-subsidized chicken feed. Let's not get into the food policy.
Look at that nuance.
Yeah, just there you go. I can't even bring myself to say chicken feed and compare it to the 33 cents a day with the full knowledge of how much we subsidize corn in this country. And we will be talking about the farm bill in the second half of the program, the funner half.
Fun.
Yeah, super fun. So please become a member today. You can also support this program by, if you buy crap from Amazon, I'm not saying you should, I'm saying that some of you I know do, but if you do, at the very least, you can support this program when you do that by going to majoritycickback.com. You click on the Amazon link denoted by an Amazon image. You bookmark that link. You call it Amazon in your bookmark bar. Whenever you need to buy something from Amazon, you just click on that link and then just go about your business. You will notice no difference, but we get a kickback. MajorityReportKickback.com. Also, JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. You can get the Majority Report blend. You can also get other blends there, but the Majority Report blend is the one you want. And you can pick up our app at majorityapp.com. It's a free app, iOS, Android. Check it out. You can listen to the show live. You can get all the, if you're a freebie, you can get all the, you can either stream the podcast or download the podcast on demand. As a member, you get something like, I don't know, how many shows have we done in the past 3 years? 200, 300, 400? I have no idea. 500? I have no idea how many shows. Six, probably 750? I don't know. They all pop up. You can, and searchable, fully searchable. So get the app today. Also, leave us a review on iTunes. That really helps. All right, folks, we'll see you in the better half. You can call this program at 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM or via the app. Just press a button. You can IM me, or you can press a button and call me from the app. It's also a great way to tell your friends to listen to the show, because it's a free app. Who doesn't like free apps? All right, folks.
814 shows.
Really?
Yes.
You got to be shooting me.
814 shows.
That's crazy.
We got to pay attention to that now that we're approaching 1,000.
Oh, we're going to break 1,000 sometime middle of this year.
Yeah.
That's insane. 814 shows. I want to take the rest of the week off. All right, folks. See you in a moment.